Good morning, everybody. I'm Ashley Nicole Moss. This is Brandon Marshall, and welcome to Paper Out.
It's not basketball season.
It is basketball season. We have media clips from, we have sound bites from Media Day yesterday. It is basketball season. If you had a, did you watch the game yesterday? Well, before, what did you do last night? How was your morning? Let's start there.
My morning was a struggle. I did yoga and meditation this morning, and it was a lot. You know, look at my shirt, because it's Mental Health Awareness Week.
Bitch, right? I'm in therapy.
I don't know if we can monetize.
Bitch,
it
is not a curse word.
Ooh, tell YouTube that. Don't say it again.
No, but it's not. It's in the dictionary. It's a female dog.
You can't curse in the first 8 minutes.
It's a female dog. It's not a curse. What if I was talking about a dog?
I don't think the algorithm picks up on that. But anyways, this is what it is, right? I'm in therapy, so there's a lot that's coming up for me. You know, doing yoga, meditating. And yes, Ashley, I watched the game last night. I have my notes. I'm prepared to have this conversation. And I do agree with what you said before our audio was available. If you were the Giants.
Well, you didn't ask you how my morning was.
Okay. How was your morning?
I actually... Kia's about to start busting out laughing when I tell this story. So I was heading out of the house, and I missed a few stairs on the way down.
You fell? I fell. Like, literally fell?
I kind of, like, slipped. Like, you know, like, when you miss a stair.
Right.
And you just kind of, like, don't full-blown fall.
Right.
I didn't, like, full-blown tumble, like, from the top to the bottom. But, like, I missed a couple steps, like...
Oh my goodness.
But that happens.
You okay?
I've fallen up the stairs before. Have you ever fallen up the stairs?
Correct. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah. It's happened to me a lot.
You're okay, though?
I'm good. I'm here, right? So we're good.
Is the Giants okay?
They are not. Listen, Monday Night Football yesterday was not a good look if you are a Giants fan. They got blown out 24-3 last night in their Monday Night Football matchup against the Seattle Seahawks. Now, the team obviously was once again running, no pun intended, without Saquon Barkley. And Daniel Jones felt that big time because the QB went 203 yards with two interceptions. So not a single touchdown, but a whole lot of INTs. Now, head coach Brian Daboll was not happy with Daniel Jones' performance or lack thereof, and it was prevalent not once, but twice during the game. So this first clip is him yelling at him on the sideline.
He's got two sacks, and then that. Red zone interception. Daboll talking to his quarterback, who's turned it over twice. And the Seahawks finally
had to their lead. So Brian Daboll was like, and Daniel was like, I didn't even try to hear that, fam. Right. Like, da-da-da. Well, look.
That's not a good look.
It's not a good look.
No, the reason,
especially when, you know, you're down 24-3 and you got two interceptions to your stat line. But I digress.
Well, we finally hit week four, and now we're past don't overreact. And so now you can see You can see who's who. And where this whole thing is going.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what happens on a very bad football team or a struggling football team. You start to fight against each other. You know, the coach and the player, you know, they start ignoring each other. You see Brian Daboll go to Danny Dimes. Danny Dimes like, man, it's already all bad. I'm not going to sit here and even entertain what you have to say right now. And plus, I know we'll dive into the conversation here shortly, but it's not all Danny Dimes. Let's be clear there, but we can have that conversation later.
So we're going to go ahead. Andrew, I just sent you another video. I don't feel like texting you, so just have that queued up for some point during this conversation. But that wasn't the only time that Brian Daboll was not happy with the $160 million man. We'll dive into that because, you know, I got a lot to say about that. There's another video where he appears to throw the surface, the iPad, in Daniel Jones's direction. When I say direction, I mean right next to him. Check this out.
He told us, you know, I'm the guy that's always fired up.
And Daniel Jones is paying him no mind. He is focused in on, I don't know what he was looking at. Right. He might have been watching movies at that point. But he was not trying to hear what Brian Daboll was saying. It was just a whole lot of mess. Daniel Jones makes $45 million a year.
He told us, you know, I'm the guy that's always fired up.
$160 million contract. The Giants played hardball with what I say is their most important offensive weapon in Saquon Barkley. Yep. And that's because they were too busy overpaying this guy. Brandon, I mean, we're a month into the season. I think you're starting to see who's who and who's not. And New York Giants are not it.
So this is the beautiful thing about our game. This is the beautiful thing about football. The New York football Giants is not it.
And we use that term loosely. New York.
But they're not finished, right? And that's the question. If you look at our YouTube thumbnail, the question is, are the Giants finished? And the answer is no. There's a lot of teams that are in this position, and if they can get through these moments where the moments that you just highlight, the head coach and the quarterback having conflict, but how do you get through that conflict? Conflict, what is your conflict resolution? Also, the moment him throwing that iPad there on national TV, like, how do you get through that? If you're able to get through that, you could potentially be the team in the next 8 weeks that are last year's Detroit Lions, last year's Jacksonville Jaguars. Hell, you want to go back to 2005, 2006, the Arizona Cardinals making it to the Super Bowl, the Pittsburgh Steelers sitting at 7-5 or damn near even, and then they go on a crazy run the second half of the season. So right now they're showing us that they don't have an offensive line. Danny Dimes can't overcome those flaws, right? Because you paid him handsomely to be able to be your guy. And when you pay someone in this capacity, what you're expecting is for them to cover up flaws. What you're expecting is for them to make guys better. Joe Burrow did it. Remember, Joe Burrow last year said, well, if I have an offensive line or not, I'm still going to ball out, right? So Danny Dimes haven't shown that he is capable of masking those huge, huge gaps that they have, because everybody now is talking about Danny Dimes. You know, you just brought up Danny Dimes, right? Rightfully so. But how the hell does a quarterback play quarterback when you're sacked 10 times? You're pressured on every other dropback. So, yes, you expect some of those guys to be a Joe Burrow. But the reality is you start playing in your head and you're not even looking down the field. You're not even going through your progressions. And I've seen this time and time again. I had 17 quarterbacks over my 13-year NFL career. And, you know, the great ones, they're able to figure it out. That's coaches and players. But there's sometimes, man, when you're getting hit this way, it's hard to overcome. Danny Dimes needs to be held accountable for certain things, but at the same time, it's not all on Danny Dimes. Now, the things that Danny Dimes can control, how the hell do you throw an interception in the red zone, right? You have, I don't know what the play was, you know, and this is where you got to really understand what their responsibilities is. They had like an option route. Receiver came in, then sat. Danny Dimes thought he was going to break out. That's on them. Y'all didn't communicate. Now that goes 99 yards for a touchdown. That's a pick six. Are you kidding me? Right? Like, what are you doing there? So there's a few things that we need to hold Danny Dimes accountable for, but we cannot exclude the coach. You cannot exclude the offensive line. You cannot exclude the general manager. This is a whole team effort to why the Giants are in this position.
I agree with that completely. But you see, this is the conversation that we were having, and not to rehash it.
With Justin Fields.
I absolutely can go there. That Justin Fields needs to also, this is the exact same argument I was making that day, was that I'm not putting all of the blame on Justin Fields. I agree with you completely. Right. I think the organization is horrendous. I think the head coach is horrendous. I don't think that
Bears?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't think that the team is constructed, the schemes are constructed to highlight Justin Fields and his strong suits. But I do think that if you're going to go ahead and pass around the blame bucket, Justin Fields has some stuff that he can go ahead and drop in there. And we've seen that throughout his time as a Chicago Bear. I think the same thing can be said about Daniel Jones. Now, Justin Fields is drastically more talented than Justin Fields. I 100% agree with that.
Well, you just said Justin Fields is drastically more talented. You mean
no, Danny Dimes. No, I think Justin Fields is drastically more talented than Daniel Dimes. Okay. Daniel Jones. I'm not going to call him Danny Dimes. Don't make me say that. Daniel Jones. So I don't think the comparison between the two quarterbacks is the same. I think the scenarios are the same in terms of accountability. But I think that the biggest difference, again, is the natural talent that I think Fields has that Daniel Jones does not. And I think also, I think if the roles were reversed, I personally believe that it may not be drastically more success, but I think that Justin Fields would have more success with the Giants than if you swapped scenarios.
Potentially, because Brian Daboll.
I don't think it'd be drastically more, but I think it'd be more than he's had in Chicago.
Well, listen, I'm not in those meeting rooms. That's why I like that play. Right now, everybody, the interception that I just called out, everybody's going to blame Danny Dimes, right? Because you're the quarterback.
Stop
and that's
calling
what,
him that.
Okay, Daniel Jones. Because the quarterback, the ball left your hand, what happened? But you saw some type of miscommunication where there's so many times you're not slot, you're not receiver, you have three or four options that you can, you know what I mean, get to. And so they weren't on the same page. If the DB stays outside, you do this. If he stays inside, you do this. If it's split, then you sit right here. And so that's where the coaching comes in at. That's where the repetition comes in at. But, you know, to your point, if Justin Fields was with Coach Brian Daboll, I do think that it could be a better situation right. because Brian Daboll is a better coach, okay? I do. But you brought it up, Ashley.
It would still be similar situations because – the offensive line is horrendous. So
yeah, but yes. And Danny Dimes is somebody you saw that last night that's more than capable of gashing you on the ground. And so Justin Fields is off to one of the most legendary starts when it comes to rushing as a quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. So he's a guy that can do the same thing. But Justin Fields, right? Like, because you brought it back up. I talked about sometimes it is the coaching. Now, we're not going to hold our guys accountable. There's always things you can do better, right? Every game, even when you can win by 40, you have a legendary game, and you're always going to find something in the film where you say, this is an opportunity for me to get better. Justin Fields comes out and says, it's the coaching. They made changes. He made changes. The very next game.
They lose.
But Justin Fields, 80%. Completion percentage, 335 yards, 4 touchdowns, late interception, and 132 QBR rating. It's the coaching. Just like I said it after week one. I can't say I've never seen anything like this, but seeing this dude play in person is special. Special. The way he moves, the way his pocket presence, the way he throws the ball, just totally different. Chicago, fix the coaching. Now we're getting back to New York and the Giants.
But
I can't say the same. I can't say the same when it comes to the Giants. But go ahead. Go ask your question.
My question, though, is because if we're just going to look at – if we're looking at a quarterback's individual stat line, right, and the win and the loss or lack thereof, in this situation you mentioned the Bears lose, but look at Justin Fields' stat line. I can make that same argument for the Jets loss, but look at Zach Wilson's stat line. Do you think Zach Wilson is a franchise quarterback? Not saying that Justin Fields is
Listen, but what every I'm case is that no, every that, case is different. Every case is different, and let's go to it because we keep saying it like the quarterback. All right, wins and losses, but is Justin Fields the one that gave up 20 something unanswered points? No. He wasn't. It's not just his fault. Now we're going to look at the very end. The Broncos came back. The defense was horrendous, was trash. Now, offensively, they sputtered at times in the second half. They didn't keep the same momentum. But now, because at the very end of the game, he's trying to make a play. He throws it up for his guy to make a play, and then it's an interception. Now we're going to take that play and say, he is the problem. No, the coaching is the problem. This freaking coach, excuse me about the curse, the Chicago Bears went for it instead of kicking the field goal and going up 2 scores. The defense gave up 20-some answer points. So it's the full picture. Now, when you're looking at these situations in Chicago, I'm saying, you know what? It's not a great look for anybody in that organization. But if I'm a bet on somebody, I'm a bet on Justin Fields over this coach. Now, in New York, what I would say is, because every case is different, if I'm a bet on somebody, I'm a bet on the coach and not the player. In New York, if I had to bet on somebody, I would probably bet on the coach and not Zach Wilson. But what I will do with Zach Wilson, because he gives you your best opportunity right now, I'm going to give him just a little bit more time, because what do you have to lose? The reality, when Aaron Rodgers went down and Aaron Rodgers is saying, I'm coming back for the playoffs, so we really think that the Jets, with just Zach Wilson, is going to get them to the playoffs and then Aaron Rodgers is going to get the ball back?
I'm sorry.
We don't know. You're sorry about what?
I'm sorry. You're going to give Zach Wilson more time to do what exactly?
Before I answer that question, Tell me, Ashley, because I see where this is going and we need to get the sage going, but tell me what the better option is.
What's one the of the alternative? Better options is seeing what veteran quarterback you can go ahead and sign to the team.
Matt Ryan?
There's Matt Ryan out there. There's
okay, so let's stay right there. Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan, they did the same thing in Indy last year.
You and he had more time.
So,
oh
my goodness,
you know
Carson,
I'm not a
Wentz.
Carson Wentz.
Hold on, let's
fan,
go back to Matt Ryan. Let's go back to Matt Ryan. Let's break him down individually. Matt Ryan had a whole offseason with Indy, and then he went out there and he imploded. If Indy is in desperate need of a quarterback, he couldn't get it done when he had the whole offense and the whole offseason to himself. And then we're going to talk about, so that's that before I go into Carson Wentz. Matt Ryan is the answer. He doesn't know the playbook.
I didn't say he was the answer. I was just naming quarterbacks that came to my mind first. I'm not saying none of those are the perfect fit, but what I'm saying is that the Jets have a lot of potential. They're missing the quarterback that can go ahead and utilize that potential. That quarterback was supposed to be Aaron Rodgers. And I understand that Zach Wilson gave his best effort against the Chiefs in that game. Yeah. And I understand that there was a lot of controversial calls or no calls that could have gone ahead and gave that game a different outcome. And I understand that he gave, like I said, his best effort. His stat line, if you look at the numbers, was good. It was a good stat line. He had a good game. But that does not negate the fact that he is not your quarterback. He is not going to win
your
football game.
Okay, so Ashley, I asked you a simple question, and the question was, what is the alternative?
The alternative is you go ahead and you see which veteran quarterback is out there. I don't know which one.
Ryan, Colin Kaepernick, Carson Wentz.
Those aren't the only three quarterbacks out there.
Who else?
I don't know. I would have to go ahead and actually look it up.
Let's do
what
the
I'm
work.
Saying is I don't think giving Zach Wilson another 3 weeks into the season is the answer either. He's not the guy. I don't know what else we need to see to make this.
I will respectfully say this, and I'm sorry, but I got to say this. It's going to piss you off. If you can't give me the alternative, then I don't think I can.
Pull up veteran quarterbacks that are.
But that's what I'm saying. Now. Like for you, to me, the proper process is you actually doing that work and saying, okay, let me see who's out there, what the better options are before I say that Zach Wilson isn't the best option.
Brandon, I don't need to know how to bake a cake to tell you that yours tastes like shit. I agree with you there. Zach Wilson is not the guy.
So, okay, let me ask you
who
this.
Who the guy is, I would have to go ahead and deep dive into that. I don't need to see any more from Zach Wilson to know that if you want to salvage this Jets season in any capacity, at this point, playoffs looks like a far distant thought right now. But if you want to salvage this season in some way, shape, or form, you are not going to do that with Zach Wilson. I just don't know.
What is the better option? So now we're saying let's bring in a Carson Wentz, let's bring in a Matt Ryan, okay? And in the middle of a season, you have to learn a playbook. Do you know how hard it is to come in and produce at a high level not knowing the formations, the terminology, the checks? Now, yes, there are some things that are universal. What is a defense? What's the front? Is it 3-4? Is it 4-3? Is it an over? Is it an under? Are they playing 3? Are they playing 1? Are they playing 2? That stuff travels. That stuff universal. Even stuff on the offensive side, it is what it is in any type of offense. But going from a West Coast offense to a spread offense to a ground and pound offense, like there's different things that you have to learn if you want to compete at a high level. So I hear your take, and I hear what everybody's, some people are saying, but what is the alternative?
So you really don't believe that there is a better option, at least in the interim, because remember, Aaron Rodgers will be back at some point. I mean,
Aaron Rodgers is finito.
I don't mean like this season.
Like next year.
I meant next season. Right. So it's not like you're looking for a forever quarterback. I am asking you, you really don't believe with the veteran quarterbacks that are floating out there, whether it's Matt Ryan, Carson Wentz is not that great either, but let's just throw his name in there. Mark Sanchez, throw his name in there. Joe Flacco, let's throw his name in. Let's throw the guys who I know on top of my
Vick,
whatever.
Brett Favre. Bring back Joe Namath.
You're like, wild for that. You're telling me that you, without a shadow of a doubt, do not believe that there is a better option out there than Zach Wilson.
Here's how it ends.
And that you should give him a couple of more weeks to figure it out.
What I said is, right now, this is your best opportunity to win. There's never been a time in the history of the NFL. We're talking about 102 or 3 years that this game has been the National Football, it's morphed into the National Football League. Give me one case where a quarterback came off the streets into a team, all right, halfway through a year or, you know, a quarter way through the year and turned it around. I'm not saying a backup quarterback on the roster that knows the playbook, that knows that the team knows his guys. I'm saying a guy off the streets integrated into their into a new scheme and took them to the Super Bowl.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the Jets aren't going to the Super Bowl regardless, so.
So what are we doing here? Why?
So do you want? So you is your analogy is not so your what's the word I'm looking for? Your choice then is to if Zach Wilson wins games, he wins. If not, he doesn't. The season's a wash at this point. Is that kind of what you're leaning towards?
Yeah, I think
just wash
and we'll talk about this, right? Like, you know, you had LeBron James tweet out like, "Yo, keep your head up," because we saw that moment of Zach Wilson sitting on the sideline taking a knee and just being totally crushed and saying, "That's my fault. I lost the game." Mm-hmm. That was a big mistake. That was a big hiccup, you know, fumbling that ball in shotgun, okay? But you have guys like LeBron saying, like, "Yo, one play don't define you. One play is not going to determine a game. It's a team effort. There's four quarters. There's what? He had – there's 70-something plays on the offensive side." So my thing is, yes, he made a critical mistake in that game. But did he get better? Did he progress? Absolutely. He wasn't the reason why that team – he wasn't the only reason why that team lost.
I agree with you completely on
so,
that.
So, yes, the way he played like he deserves to have more time. He earned the opportunity. That's the best way to say it. He earned the opportunity for another week or two.
Let me play you
and we'll see what happens.
Let me play devil's advocate there before we move on. He's going to get another week or two. It's not like they're signing somebody tomorrow. So that's very much the reality of the situation. So let's say devil's advocate, he regresses next week. And then he regresses the week after that. And now you're at week 7 of the season. Now what do you do? You just say, ride it out? Let's give him more time. What do you do at that point?
So with the season pretty much is over. So now what you're looking at, you're looking into the future. You saw the disdain on Aaron Rodgers' face in the box sitting there like, damn, shaking his head, upset. What I saw was a guy saying, damn, man, just get me in position. I'm trying to come back in 4 months, right? Like, just get me in position. But if you lose
insane.
It will be insane. But if you lose a couple more ball games, now what you're looking forward to, you're going to say, Aaron Rodgers, don't even rush the process. Take your time. All right, because we're looking into 2024. And then now what you're looking at is, all right, what do we got to do what's best for Zach? The reason why I say that is because what are we going to do with Zach? Do we ride this out with Zach to see if he can actually create any type of value, trade value, or do we have somebody on our roster, or do we need to go find somebody, okay, that could potentially develop to be the number two to Aaron Rodgers next year? So you totally go into 2024, but you're not going out there after, you know, sitting there at 1-6 trying to go get a Carson Wentz or a Matt Ryan trying to salvage a season that is highly unlikely for you to even be in position to make it to the playoffs.
All right. Well, we shall see what happens with Zach Wilson, the Jets, and the saga that is New York Jets football. Now, before we move on from this conversation, there is something that happened on the other side of this game, and that's with the Seattle Seahawks. Now, you and I, we discussed that this was going to be Jamal Adams' first game returning after over, what was it, 347, or I don't know what the number was, games, days away from the game, and this was going to be his big return. Well, it didn't quite go as planned. Jamal Adams was seen visibly frustrated with what looked like to be the team physician, the team doctor, who ruled him out after getting hit in the head, and he was not able to play the remainder of the game. We have this video. Check this out.
Meanwhile, Jamal Adams, who we saw take a knee to the head, has been on the sideline trying to work his way back into this game, and he has since left and gone to the locker room.
So as we mentioned, Jamal Adams has been out for over a year from the game of football, actually away from the game of football for over a year. This was his big return. They put the camera on him. You know, they did a video on social, you know, he's back. And then this happens, and this is unfortunate. He was visibly upset, obviously. I mean, the team doctor is just looking out for him as a player. Yeah. Sometimes you got to protect the player from themselves. So I understand the frustration. The doctor's just doing his job, trying to make sure that he's okay. Yeah. But you could understand the frustration of him.
100%, but I'm going to go a little deep here. Like, I'm just in this weird space right now. So I'm going to go a little deep here. First off, Jamal Adams was concussed, right? For sure. Like, I mean, a knee to the head. Mm-hmm. And then when the way he laid there, and then when he got up, he barely had his eyes open. Mm. He needed help walking to the sideline. You are concussed. So you just said it yesterday, and 100% right. It's like sometimes you got to protect the player from himself. Mm-hmm. That's what the organization did. He is that type of player that he'll play through anything. He's an old school type player. That's why I love him to death.
Especially,
and I'm like, I'm rooting for him
when you're
to come back.
Away from the game as long as he has been away from it. It's 100%. Like, no, I'm not coming out of this one. I just got back.
And that takes me to my second point and where I go deep. What it says, bitch, I'm in therapy. Welcome to Mental Health Awareness Week. Doing yoga, Ashley, last week, what came up for me was, like, Kayla, my yoga instructor, we go through affirmations and we say certain things. And one mm-hmm. of the things she had me working on last week, she said, your strength is your love is your greatest strength. Right.
Okay.
And so I'm breaking that down, because when I think about my strength, it's like with Jamal Adams, I'm like, I'm him. Mm-hmm.
Like,
but the reality is, we're at this phase that I'm going in my life is like the opposite, like softer, kinder, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so when I see that, right, what I see is a guy who may be struggling because of what you just said. I'm out. Think about that pressure. Mm. 300 and something days I've been away from this game. Also, the coaches, the players looking at me. Who is he going to be? How am I going to come back? Me looking at myself. Am I going to be the Jamal Adams that I was when I was at LSU in the first couple years of my career, even the first year when I was with Seattle? This dude has sustained injury after injury after injury over the last 3 to 4 years. So walking in, you saw the pressure. He looked fly. You saw the pressure. You saw all of that. So in that moment, going back and forth, what I saw was a gentleman like fuck. There's no way I can't play this game. Mm-hmm. Now it's hitting my ego. Now it's tapping into my insecurity. So I know I went a little deep there, way too deep.
No. I feel like that's very accurate. I mean, I think we see that.
Thank you for validating that.
No, I think we see it across sports in general. I mean, it's an immense amount of pressure. I mean, and that's why you also see why when you come out on the winning side of that. I mean, we talked about this during basketball season with Jamal Murray. Why he was so emotional winning that finals. Because of what it took for him to get there. Being on the other side of that also is highly emotional. I mean, I remember watching his like mini doc that, you know, kind of chronicled his whole situation from beginning to end. I mean, there were times he couldn't even sleep because he was in so much pain. And
that's right.
And, you know, he said famously, you know, that he thought the Denver Nuggets were going to give up on him because he was damaged goods. And in his speech when he won the finals, he said, thank you for not giving up on me. So when you come out on the other side, that emotion is so real. So I can understand completely being on the side of you want to get back to even where you were. And it's, you know, everybody's watching you. You have the pressure on yourself. You're happy to be back. And then reality hits, like literally hits. And now it's like, now you're wondering, okay, now how long is this going to be? How am I going to get back to the game that I've worked so hard to get back to? Now I got to start not from zero, but now I've taken like a couple of steps back.
Yep.
I mean, a concussion, we see people come back from concussions all the time. Jamal Adams.
It's another setback.
It's another setback. I mean, roughly, do you see him coming back in a week? Is it going to be longer than that? You know, what's that time frame?
It seemed like he... I'm not a neuroscience, right? Mm-hmm. A scientist, right? So I'm not a brain doctor. You know, I'm not like in the process of the concussion protocol. So just looking at it from a player's perspective, he bounced back fairly quickly, right? Meaning like he's in the right state of mind to argue with the team doctors. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that it looks like it could be a week or 2 week thing. You just saw Waddle, sit down for a week and then he came back, right? There's cases in the past where you see guys that got to be carried off, et cetera, and that turns into 3, 4, 5 weeks. So I'm hopeful that it's, you know, a week or two. But I don't even think that's where, you know, I'm just more concerned for like just his mental state right now. Well, and it's like players, you got like OBJ that's been in this situation. Cam Newton, it wasn't due to injury, but remember, like, I didn't like how Cam Newton handled his comeback, right? So he came back and he was like, I'm back. And then, you know, you can't control what happens the next 2 to 3 weeks, right? And then you saw the team actually go the opposite way. And now you kind of look like you look foolish a little bit, right? So, like, these are the moments where you really got to dig deep and do some work as a player to overcome, you know, some of these setbacks.
Well, real quick before we move on, I know I said that a while ago, but just one more thing. I mean, I always wonder, Jamal Adams, his game is so just
violent
and aggressive. That's what makes him just such an incredible athlete, incredible at his position. I wonder if, you know, from the year that he was away from the game and now this unfortunate situation, do you have to then kind of sit back and be like, do I have to figure out another way to play to extend my longevity in this game? Is that something that he's going to maybe have to consider?
Yeah, I think for him, the biggest thing is more so taking his head out of the game, right? Like that hit that caused the concussion, he led with his helmet. And to me, that's more rust. You know, he should have hit with his shoulder pad. That was a open, that was an easy open field tackle for him. But like, that was like an Aaron Rodgers moment almost, right? Where that was a few minutes into the first quarter. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like, you think about it. You got 70,000 cheering fans out there. The bright lights are on, right? You are one of the feature stories of the night. Mm-hmm. You know, there's 5 to 6 cameras on you. Now you get this open field tackle and you lose your technique. So I think it was more of a rust thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think he needs to change his game. It's just don't lead with your helmet. But mm-hmm. he's always going to be a guy that inflicts pain, that he's going to approach it with violence. Like, he can't change that. Just don't lead with your helmet.
All right. Well, we are going to go ahead and move on, sending positivity, a speedy recovery to Jamal Adams. Now, on the other side of some football talk, Travis plus Taylor equals trash talk, apparently. Because, as we know, Travis Kelce's new relationship with 12-time Grammy winner Taylor Swift has taken over the NFL. But it is now entering the personal playbook of players. The Chiefs will face off against the Minnesota Vikings on Sunday. And CB Brian Murphy has already had his game plan prepared. Trash talking Travis Kelce with stuff related to Taylor Swift. He told Kevin Cerf of ESPN, "I'm going to say something to get him going. Is she going to come to this game? We're locked in, but that would be something. I've been watching her since I was a kid. That would be cool for sure. Not for him, but because we're going to try to get our hands on him in front of her."
Good luck. Good luck. He's in a moment. What? You don't like it?
It's like, oh, I'm going to try to get you in front of your girlfriend. Like, shut up.
That works for some players, but not him.
Like, I just.
Listen, it works for some players, but not Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce is going to go down. Probably. It's hard to say this, but no, I'm going to say it. Travis is going to go down as the best tight end ever to play the game.
It's just very, I mean, yeah, and of course. Yeah.
So, you know, for this young man to think that this is going to work. I mean, Travis has heard so much worse. He's been through the fire to even get to this point. This is a dude that's battle tested. He wasn't even supposed to be here. He wasn't supposed to be a world champion. Don't get on me. I definitely called him a world champion, but he wasn't supposed to be a world champion. He ain't supposed to have all these commercials. He's not supposed to have Taylor Swift. This dude ain't supposed to be in the NFL. He played basketball growing up. He morphed into a football player over the years and a tight end. So come on, man. Like, this is not going to work against a guy like
it's
that who's
corny.
In a moment.
I've been watching her since I was a kid, so I'm going to try to get him in front. Like, shut up. Like, stop. It's very much like, but you see, you do that with the wrong dude, that's how you end up in a Kevin Garnett, Carmelo Anthony, Honey Nut Cheerio situation. That's how you get them paws put on you. Yeah. So I'm not saying Travis Kelce's that guy. I don't think he is, But I'm just saying, you got to watch whose girlfriend, whose wife that you using as trash talk material, because sometimes you're going to let your mouth write a check your ass can't cash. Because I've seen things go down when someone took trash talk and made it a little bit too personal.
Right. Well, if he dated Taylor Swift in the past, then I would say, okay, now it's going to get interesting. Now it's spicy. That's different. But for you to just talk about, is Taylor here?
Oh, no. This situation, I don't think they, first of all, they haven't been even together that long for that to be.
And where
like
is the game?
Point.
Taylor's not, she's not traveling to Minnesota.
I don't think it will work for a multitude of reasons. One, because it's like they haven't been together long enough for this to even like be a soft spot.
Right.
But like, I've seen trash talk get very personal about wives and longtime girlfriends and like baby mamas who then dated somebody else and they now share a similar, like, I've seen that get bad. So like this situation,
Matt Barnes and what's the coach's name?
Oh, Derek Fisher. Yeah. But that wasn't trash talk. That was different. But what like I have, this is not going to be that situation, but I would not advise that to be part of somebody's game plan, because sometimes that gets ugly. Brandon, I know that you have seen that before.
For sure. I've been in those situations as well where, you know, it's cool to talk trash, but the wives are off limits. Your ladies are off limits. You know, there's certain, your kids are off limits. That's when it turns personal. But, you know, if you're dating someone and you just ask, is your girl here today? Is she coming? Like, no, that ain't.
Yeah.
Maybe it's one of those moments where you look up like, yo, don't talk about my chick, bro, before I slap you.
I guess. But listen, speaking of the Chiefs, their matchup with the Jets on Sunday was the most watched show since Super Bowl 57, 27 million viewers. You got to go ahead and count some of the Swifties as part of that viewership. That's insane. Since Super Bowl 57.
I know. Well, you know, they say the NFL is scripted. you know, and like, listen, it's like a whole different world. Like, Travis Kelce, you can't turn on a television and not see him. So my question is this script, is this part of the script as well, right? Because, you know, is this real? Is this real love? Are y'all really a thing? Are y'all just dating? What is this? Or is this a publicity stunt? Or is this you guys just like taking advantage of the opportunity, leaning into the opportunity with the NFL? The NFL says, you know what? You're now our poster boy. You are our guy. So we're going to put you in all these commercials. All right. Now we're going to take advantage of this moment. Now we're going to pair you with Taylor Swift. All right. That's going to be good for you. It's going to be good for her. And it's going to be good for the NFL. And that's why you're seeing these numbers.
Stop. This is where I have to stop you. I'm saying stop because I feel like publicity stunts work for people or are necessary for people who need publicity. Let's be honest here. Travis Kelce is a Hall of Fame tight end.
Yep.
He was on Saturday Night Live. He was in Vanity Fair. He has a booming podcast. He's been in multiple commercials before being with Taylor Swift. State Farm. What's the other one that I'm drawing a blank on? You know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Campbell Soup.
I mean, let's
DirecTV.
He's made cameos in like I think one or two films.
Yeah, he's in a moment.
Like, didn't need any of that. Okay, he's a multiple time Super Bowl champ.
Because he's in a moment. He won a Super Bowl. Now, how do you parlay that to build your brand?
Right,
that is only lived for 6 to 12 months.
But no, because he has. If it wasn't for the writer's strike, I would guarantee that you would have saw him do more during the summer.
For sure.
Let's put that to side.
But even if he did, it would only lasted. Look, think about all the other moments that Super Bowl champions have had. Right, first they go to Disney, then they go to.
But remember, he is still an active player. Wait until he's done. Like he was in freaking Vanity Fair. Let's put that into perspective. He's done Fashion Week. Like let's put that into perspective. On the other side of that, she's a 12-time Grammy winner who just came off of one of the biggest grossing tours in the history of music. She's almost a billionaire.
Right.
She's worth $750 million. Taylor Swift has a fan base that ranges from 10-year-old girls to 60-year-old women.
Right.
She does not need the publicity. She is filthy rich. She has done, and she's filthy rich off of music alone. Okay. She doesn't do movies. She doesn't do TV.
Well, let me say this one
thing.
They
don't need publicity.
You know what?
She doesn't need him, and vice versa.
I'm going to take all those stats that you just used on both of them.
Oh,
right?
My God.
Travis Kelce, la, la, la. Taylor Swift, la, 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 billionaire, la, 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 la. You know what makes them who they are and why they've achieved all of that?
I'm not going to do this with you, Brandon.
Because,
go ahead.
Because, you know, people like that, it's never enough.
Oh, my God.
It's never enough. They want more.
Brandon, Travis she Kelce, it doesn't matter. House to sneeze it and then paparazzi. It does, she does
that's
not
right.
need
and
this
guess
man.
What? She wants more.
Oh,
she
my
wants,
God.
There's three. How many followers does she have right now?
I don't know. A whole lot.
She like, Taylor Swift has like
and
150
her
million.
Her needle didn't
you know what
move
she's looking
because
at?
Of him. It was already moving.
This is listen, Taylor Swift. All right. Taylor Swift has, 273 million of followers. I'm gonna see Kim K. Kim, she's growing now. I want to see because they keep talking about Travis Kelce and saying Travis Kelce have gained 3 million followers since they went public with this.
No, 900,000 was a million followers. He's gained a million.
Oh, he gained a million.
Yes.
Okay. Now he's at three. How many did she gain?
Nothing.
Yes, she did. I'm telling you, she definitely did. Kim Kardashian's at 364 million. Let's look at Beyonce.
That's different.
Hold on.
Though.
Oh, no, I'm about to
K
make a point.
Is a totally different.
Beyonce's
situation.
At 317 million. Taylor Swift is sitting there saying, "That why not me?
No.
Why don't I have more? I need to have more Instagram followers
Brandon.
Than anyone." They think differently.
Brandon, she has an entire freaking continent of followers, of fans, of fanatics, of Swifties. They're crazy. Like, it's not the same as like a Kim Kardashian, who's an incredible businesswoman, but she doesn't have a talent that resonates with a fan base. So a lot of what she is because of the publicity behind her. That's the whole brainchild behind her reality show. Like, the more publicity she gets, the better it is for her brands and things like that. Taylor Swift has a legitimate talent. She's a singer. She's a songwriter. Like, she has...
I hear you on all of that.
She's filthy rich just off of that alone. But she doesn't need Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
And why would she do that to herself?
This is a fun story. You know what I'm saying? It's pretty cool. You know, and I think a lot of people are leaning into it, including themselves. They know what they're doing. They're celebrities. We know this, Ashley. Is there any relationships out there that the world don't know about, but you or I may know about?
I'm just saying, some private stuff.
I'm just saying, we're not going to go into any details.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay. And guess what? How did they keep it private? They kept it private because they know how to be discreet and move properly. So if they wanted to keep this private, they could have kept it private. So they're leaning into this as well. And the only thing I'm saying here, okay, is that I believe people like that, the Taylor Swifts of the world, even us, you know, regular athletes, the Travis Kelces of the world, who's in his bag? He's having a moment. I'm so happy for him, so proud of him. They always want more. Those are the things that's probably on her mood board. On your mood board and my mood board might be a little different. The stuff that she writes on her mood board, she's like, how do I become the number one followed person in the world?
I gotta move on, Brandon.
How do
I
surpass Michael Jackson? Kim K ain't got nothing on me.
I can't. I gave all of my AFs about the situation. I gave them up. I don't have any more to give for the week. So this is going to be the last time we talk about this for the week. I don't have any more cares to give to this situation. All right, moving on. Apparently being undefeated comes at a random price because the Philadelphia Eagles are just one of the two remaining undefeated NFL teams entering week 5, and apparently there's a cost to balling out. Wide receiver AJ Brown was randomly selected for a drug test by the NFL following the team's win against the Washington Commanders on Sunday, per CBS's Jeff Kerr. Now, Brown had 9 catches, 175 receiving yards, 2 TDs. The last Eagles wide receiver with those game day stats, can you guess who it was?
Justin Jefferson.
Fast Philadelphia Eagle. Eagles wide receiver with those game day stats.
DeSean Jackson.
No.
Him.
No.
Terrell Owens.
I'll give you a hint. His first name is Jeremy.
Oh, Macklin.
Yes. Jeremy Macklin was the last Eagles wide receiver to have those game day stats. So we have a video of AJ Brown walking back from the tunnel. He had no shoes on because someone asked for his cleats.
And he gave them away.
But here is the record breaker himself. There we go.
His haircut.
the Black Batman.
Yeah, listen, between him and Devontae Smith, they are balling out in Philadelphia. Brandon, the random drug test. We had this conversation, I remember, during the Steven Jackson episode of I Am Athlete, and you and Pac were on the same type of wave. Listen, if I get randomly drug tested, I'm doing something right, so I'm not mad at it. You think he cares?
He doesn't care, but it's one of those things that's annoying because it just messes up your whole day. You got to drink water, and you can't be over-diluted. Right. So now, like, you know, like, you got to jump out of meetings, find the guy. It's just a whole process.
They don't find you? You got to find them?
No, they stay in the bathroom and you just got to check in. So they stay in the bathroom and you could be going to weights. You could be going to meetings, special teams, offense.
What do you mean they stay in the bathroom? They got like a desk in the bathroom? Like, hey, yes. Welcome, check in.
Yes.
Are you being funny?
I'm being 100%. They stay in the bathroom. So, like, obviously the locker room is huge. So we have our own space. You have your own locker. And then you have a bathroom, right? And so the guys literally stay in the bathroom. Yes, they stay right there. But it's like big. It's a big bathroom.
Why do they stay? To make sure like nobody's peeing in the cup.
Because like when a guy comes to test you, they may have 10, 20 tests, right? So now you got to wait and be ready.
It's like for when they're ready to, in the bathroom.
When they're ready to whip it out. You got to be ready. He can't be in the cafeteria. He can't be in a weight room. You don't know when these guys got to come and pee.
Wow. Okay. I know more about NFL drug tests than I would like to. There we go. Well, listen, on the topic of record breaking, Puka Nacua, and the P is for phenomenal, because the Los Angeles Chargers defeated the Raiders on Sunday 24-17 to improve to 500. But all eyes were on the rookie Puka Nacua. Look at the stat line. 10 targets, 9 receptions, 163 receiving yards, 1 receiving touchdown that happened to be the game winner, 18.1 yards/reception. He currently has the most receptions in the entire league and the second most receiving yards behind only Justin Jefferson.
This is amazing.
Wait, it gets better, Brandon. Are you ready for this? Mm-hmm. Check this out. All right, just now entering week 5 of the season, Nacua has 39 receptions and has surpassed Anquan Boldin and his 30 receptions in 2003 for the most receptions by a player in his first 4 NFL games. Now, Nacua has also surpassed Reggie Bush and his 34 receptions in 2006 for the most receptions by a player in his first 5 NFL games.
Wow.
Those are some big stats that the Rook is out here breaking. I mean,
impressive.
We had the opportunity to speak to him. Such a nice guy, a beast. And this is what he's doing without Cooper Kupp in the mix. Wait until the Chargers get both of these guys back. That is going to be.
It was interesting is this, though, right? My second year in the league, we had Javon Walker, because you brought up Cooper Kupp.
Mm-hmm.
And Javon had it dealing with a knee, and he was going to be down for a couple of weeks. So now they made me the number one receiver. I was the number two.
Mm-hmm.
I went out there, and I had 9 catches, 10 catches, 9 catches. 10. This wasn't my first year. This was my second year, but I had, like, a run like this. And I remember Jay Cutler and Jeremy Bates walking up to me and saying, like, they were just bantering. They were just like, yo, I don't know what Javon Walker going to do when he come back, because you the guy.
Oh, no.
Right? So think about that. If you're Matthew Stafford, if you're Sean McVay, you go with the hot hand. Yeah, we're going to get Cooper Kupp back into it,
mm-hmm.
right? And we know what he can do, but is this the future? Like, what do you do in that situation? So, you know, it's interesting. I wasn't planning on going that way, but you brought up Cooper Kupp. Mm-hmm. But they're going to definitely be in a situation here soon. Some of those numbers that stood out to me, if we can throw up the first graphic, the 10 targets, 9 receptions.
Well, we do have the wrong helmet there, by the way. He is a Los Angeles Ram,
yep.
Not a Charger.
There we go. We're going to correct that. So 10 targets, 9 receptions stands out to me because it's efficient. This is so efficient. This is one of the things that I always looked at as a receiver. I hate it when I had 170 targets, mm-hmm. But then I only had – you know, 90 catches or 100 catches. We weren't that efficient. Like, I wanted when the ball came to me for us to be at least 70, 80%. Mm-hmm. And so this is amazing. He's been doing it through the first four games. Also, I think this is probably the lead candidate to break my record. 21 catches in a game.
Well, he did promise you he wasn't going to break it this season.
And
he did say that. I don't know if he's going to maintain his promise. But.
Right, because you remember what I said it's going to take for someone to break the record? And so for some of you guys out there who may not know me, I had 21 catches in the game. And so it's been standing there for a little bit now, some time. And all records are meant to be broken, so it's definitely going to fall. But I feel like it's really hard because it has to be the perfect situation, right? Like, you have to be playing, you have to be down. Mm-hmm. And you also have to be a guy. You have to be a guy that has a quarterback that is going to come to you at this rate, at this mm-hmm. clip, right? So just have to be in a situation where they're going to throw the ball, but they're only throwing to you. And those are losing situations. You think about the Rams, they're not the Rams of old. This Rams team is going to be playing behind a lot this year, maybe even next year. Mm-hmm. And if Matthew Stafford's there and their chemistry continues to build, man, this dude gonna break my record so bad. He might have 30 catches in the game. That's crazy. He might have 30 catches. So, Puka, you know, I'm gonna enjoy the next couple of weeks or the next year, but I know you're gonna be the one to break my record. And it's bittersweet. Bittersweet.
Well, listen, we actually had a chance to speak to the Los Angeles Ram. And this is what we talked about. Here's a little bit of clip of that.
Like you said, being able to be there alongside Cooper Kupp and to be there with Matthew Stafford, the communication those two guys have between each other is unreal. It's top. It's professional. It's the best in the world because you've seen it, what they do together. And then just to kind of be there a part of it and try to get the little nuances and the cues that they're communicating just in the game of football. But then to be able to get it when Matthew's talking specifically to Coop about this route on we're breaking out against this leverage, or we're seeing this type of coverage. This is what I'm thinking. So to be on the same page, it makes it super easy because number nine don't miss.
Right.
Listen, this is going to be very, very interesting. Just continuing to watch his development. Look, we say this all the time. I think I said it. Now, the Rams did lose to the Bengals 16-19. They are right now at 1-2. But again, all eyes are on Puka Nacua. He is surpassing a lot of the expectations I think people may have had for him coming into this season, not just with the Rams, but just as an individual. I don't know. Time will tell if he can continue this trajectory once Cooper Kupp gets back. Yeah. We shall see.
Yeah, we will see. It's dope that we had him on our show, and people looking at him, who is this guy? Why are y'all interviewing him? Mm-hmm. Well, now you see why. The dude is special. And I'll be honest, I wasn't expecting this. I was not expecting. I don't even think the Rams were expecting this. Mm-mm. What round did he go? Do we know what round he went? Was fourth, fifth round?
He wasn't
No. Let me be clear. Let me put some respect on his name.
Okay, sure. We can go ahead and search that up. But, yes, yeah, so for people who are unaware, let's go ahead and throw that stat lineup just one more time to just showcase how impressive that actually was. This here is a fifth round draft pick, ladies and gentlemen. So it is not all about the pick. It is not all about the round. It's about the man behind it.
Yeah, and the last
I like the last line he said. The rookie wide receiver is cooking his name like Walter White. You get that reference?
No.
You don't.
Yeah. No,
you don't know who Walter White is.
Who's Walter White?
Brandon, be for real.
Walter White. Let me Google.
You don't Google. Know who Walter White is.
Google.
Oh my God.
We gonna Google this.
Oh my God.
Walter.
No, Brandon, be serious. Don't Google it. Are you for real? Yeah. You don't know either, Keon.
I barely knew my teammates. Oh yeah, nobody. I don't know actors like that. I know Denzel Washington and Kerry Washington and Will Smith is somebody I know.
You didn't even know what
show
he was from?
What's the Halle Berry? That's it.
That's everybody not his else. Real name.
Walter White?
That's not.
Walter Hartwell White Sr., also known by his alias Heinsberg.
Breaking Bad, but that's not his real name.
I wasn't watching no Breaking Bad.
You've never seen Breaking Bad?
No, I was watching The Wire. I was watching...
First of all, the time frame between the two is drastically different.
When was Breaking Bad running and airing?
You've never seen Breaking Bad? I've never met someone who's never watched Breaking Bad.
Season. When did Breaking Bad start?
People in the chat, have you seen Breaking Bad? I've never met someone who's never watched Breaking Bad.
I'm Googling Breaking Bad. Like, when did this start?
We don't watch Breaking Bad.
I've heard
Ash.
Of Breaking Bad.
What?
This is 2013. So
knows who that
season is. Season five was 2013. So when was season one? Let's go back. Season five?
What? I didn't watch it either. Oh, yes. My God. Nobody is watching Breaking Bad. What the hell is going on? We are losing recipes.
2008, this came out. 2008, let's look at The Wire. I was watching The Wire.
Nobody watches Breaking Bad.
I was watching...
Oh, my God. People in the chat have not watched Breaking Bad. What the hell?
No, Ashley.
Nope, never saw Breaking Bad. I've never watched Breaking Bad. Sorry, heard of it, but don't care. Oh, my God.
You know what, Ashley? That's 2002. So 2002 is when The Wire came out, but it ran for I don't know how many seasons.
How have all these people never... Brandon, these are your people. Like, so, they've never seen Breaking Bad. I am dumbfounded right now.
Ain't nobody watching Breaking
Bad.
That
series was incredible.
That's the other side of you.
That's not a white thing. What are you... God. I can't. Okay. I cannot believe that this many people have never seen this.
Ashley watching Breaking Bad. What is it called? Yellowstone.
Yellowstone, I've never watched. I heard Yellowstone's a really good show. I've actually never seen an episode. My parents, like, are obsessed with it. But I've never... watched it. I actually kind of want to get into it because I've heard really good things.
Let me ask you this. You watch Friends?
Like, I've seen episodes of Friends. I've never watched the entire series. The Office is hilarious, Brandon. You've never seen The Office?
I mean, I've seen episodes, but I ain't sitting there watching.
Like, oh, those. Come on now.
I'm watching the Martin. I'd rather watch Martin. I think I'm watching reruns of Martin over... Breaking Bad.
Hold on a second. The Office is prime comedy. Don't try The Office. That's crazy.
It is.
That's insane.
See, but you're very cultured.
I don't discriminate on types of things. Like, I watch Billions. I watch Succession.
I love Billions. I tried to get in Succession.
You didn't like it?
Well, I just can't get in a rhythm with just watching TV. I got so much going on. But I found that show to be very entertaining. For sure. I love Billions. I was watching The Walking Dead.
Oh, I was very big into The Walking Dead, but then I stopped watching it, like, I want to say, like, after like six seasons or something like
Outside
that.
Of The Wire, I watched that when that was on back in the day. Said 2002 is when that dropped.
I liked Snowfall.
I watched Snowfall. Mm-hmm. But outside of like The Wire, Martin, Living Color, like sitcoms like that, I was young when the Cosbys was really in his peak. Mm-hmm. I didn't really get into sitcoms until I retired. Coming home and just every day, oh, let's put on our show. Mm-hmm. Like, I literally start doing that in 2019. And that was just a bonding thing to do at the crib. Like, so now I'm still trying to get in the rhythm. Like, how do you find good shows? What's working?
Do you watch, if you watch The Wire, did you ever watch The Sopranos?
I watched The Sopranos. I did. That was good. Mm-hmm. The Sopranos was dope. Fire. Mm-hmm. But see us, like, you know, the hood, like, gravitates to those type of stories, right? Like, mafia, mm-hmm. you know, that type of vibe. So, like, yeah, I was on to that.
I just cannot believe that people have not seen Breaking Bad. That was such a great series.
I heard it was good.
And then the spinoff, Better Call Saul.
You know what's also crazy with people? They like, yo, you're wild. What's the one show that it's like, wow, every episode your hero dies? I tried to get into that. Like, I watched like two episodes. What's the one like, they're like killing people? Game of Thrones.
Oh, Game of Thrones was phenomenal. But the last season was like not good.
Game of Thrones.
They got lazy. They got real sloppy that last season. It pissed me off. If that's how they were going to do things, they should have just not done it. It pissed me off.
Right.
Ozark was amazing. Did you watch Ozark?
Nope.
Damn, Brandon, you don't be watching nothing.
What we watching now? What we on now? Because Snowfall ain't there. I'm over Power.
Yeah, I haven't watched
Empire. Yeah. I'm over that.
Empire?
You never watched Empire?
I'll tell you a story about Empire. So the first episode of Empire, I tried to watch it. I like Taraji P. Henson. I like Terrence Howard. So I was like, I'm going to watch it. And then the part where he starts singing that Drip Drop song come, and I said, can't do this. I can't do
it.
It
was so good. It's so,
I was like,
so
I cannot
good.
Do this. I can't watch this. I'm sorry. Like, I tried. I tried to support it.
It was good. It was good. I got couldn't. Into
the
it.
Drip Drop lost me.
Drip Drop.
Drip Drop lost me. He started singing that, and I said, yeah, I'm not going to be able to do this. I can't. I tap out.
What we on now, people? So the chat, shout out to everybody in the chat. Top Boy. Top Boy's old. No,
it's still going. It's the last season of Top Boy.
Huh?
It's the last season of Top Boy.
Top Boy?
Season 4.
I watched the first couple seasons. So when did this season start? This was what Wu and BC was talking about in the back, but they said that this... BC, y'all lied to me, bro.
Why?
Because last week, I came in and BC... No, they were talking about it, and I said, yo, I thought Top Boy, like, was like, no, this is the old stuff. They said this was the old season.
Ooh, Queen of the South is a good show. I see that. Godfather of Harlem, maybe. Also a very good show. I'm excited for the, I think it's a movie or a miniseries, the one with Sofia Vergara. She's going to be playing Griselda Blanco, the drug dealer from Colombia. I'm excited about that. Ballers is not even on anymore. Were you ever in Ballers?
No.
You never did an episode of Ballers?
No.
Oh, okay. No. Well, listen, we're going to move it along here. Mr. Beast is now Mr. Basketball because Mr. Beast currently owns the jersey patch rights for the Charlotte Hornets. They are using the logo for his company, Feastables. This is cool. Look, it's on the jersey. So it's Jordan Brand. And Mr. Beast on the same jersey. That's actually insane when you think about that.
Like, yeah.
To go from being a YouTuber to having a patch on the same jersey that the Jordan logo is just directly across from is dope. Talk about a come up.
New media. Great job, Mr. Beast. You know how much money he's making a year?
I don't.
This just came out, like, damn, I was looking at it a couple weeks ago, and there was, like, him, there was the kid, Kai, there was the you know, Logan, the Paul brothers, and so many other influencers or YouTubers. He was number one, of course, I think, like, $85 million he's making.
I've never seen a single Mr. Beast video.
I mean, I
don't know if that's my demo.
I'm not surprised. No, it's not.
Is that my demo?
No. Oh, okay. But
I've never seen a Logan Paul video either when they were on YouTube.
Me either.
Or Jake, like, I don't.
Me either.
I don't watch, like, YouTube videos
like that. But like, they created an audience, and they're like, they were, like, the first. The Paul brothers were, because I watched the Netflix series. I forget the Netflix series, but the one that they highlighted, Johnny Manziel, they sit down with a lot of athletes. Mm-hmm. And the Logan Paul was one of them, and they talked about his story. And part of his story is he was one of the first on YouTube. Right?
So, what is he? Is he like a Twitcher? Is that what they're called? Like, does he like stream video game? Like, what is he?
No, he does a lot of things, but no, he's just, I don't even know. I only seen like a couple of,
like, what
of
is
his stuff.
Is he like a vlogger? Like, what is his videos? What are they about?
More like a vlogger, but he's like giving away a lot of things. He's doing wild stuff. Like, now he's morphed into a place where he'll like destroy a. I don't know.
Interesting.
I just know that his stuff works, but I'm not like watching it. It's not my demo either.
Yeah, I don't get it. But listen, amazing. Love that for him. All right, we're going to move back into football. That was just a little bit of basketball talk. We'll have some more later in the show. He's Barbie. And well, he's just Ken. Did you see the Barbie movie? You won't get that reference.
No.
You haven't seen the Barbie movie?
No. I haven't seen a Barbie
movie.
Okay,
real quick before, but it's actually a lot deeper than just like Barbie. So I think, you know, definitely take your kids, especially your girl, to go ahead and watch this movie.
I can go on a date to see Barbie?
No, like your daughter.
Oh, say when you say your girl.
No,
oh.
Your daughter. Because I think that the storyline is a lot deeper than just Barbie and Ken.
Okay.
And I think that young women should definitely see the movie. That's
I'm gonna take
what
her.
I that's
I'm
what I took away her. From it. He said, "My, I can go on a date." No, your child. Well, listen, Bill Belichick's largest margin of defeat in his coaching career happened on Sunday when the Patriots lost to the Cowboys 3-38. That loss has once again reopened the infamous chicken or the egg conversation when it comes to him and seven-time Super Bowl champion Tom Brady. As we now know, Brady would leave New England and go on to Tampa Bay, where he would win another Super Bowl without Bill Belichick. Meanwhile, Belichick has not had the same success since Brady's departure,
nope,
or even close to it. Now, Shannon Sharp believes that Bill Belichick's legacy, quote, deserves to take a hit. He said, "It's becoming more and more apparent to me that Tom Brady was largely the reason why the Patriots won." Listen to this.
You're absolutely right. It deserves to take a hit. And I've been one of those guys that said that Coach Belichick deserved a lot more of the credit than Tom Brady. But I was foolish in my assessment of this. It's becoming more and more apparent to me that Tom Brady was largely the reason why the Patriots won. Because you see, he go to another team and they win. Coach Belichick has struggled to win without Tom Brady. And see, what happens is that no matter how great the dynamic is, there's going to be a point in time that I want more credit. And it can't be 50-50. 50-50 is not good enough when you're dealing with two guys that have the massive egos that these two men have. Because remember, guys, the more successful you are, the greater your ego is. So I need to show I'm the reason why we're having more the success. No, I'm the reason. So Coach Belichick says, I'm going to go win one without you. Out the door you go. You see, we can't have that argument because we saw Joe win a Super Bowl without Bill Walsh. So we can't say that they were winning because of Walsh, because we saw Joe win one without him. Coach Belichick wanted to leave no doubt in anybody's mind that the reason why the Patriot way and everything that falls up under the umbrella, the way we do press conferences, the way we report injuries, and the way we do things are because of me. But what he failed to realize is that he had that general, that 17-star general in Tom Brady that made everything smooth. And he's finding out the hard way it's not as easy as he ever thought it would be.
Yikes. Well, we also, there's been a few articles written since, you know, that game. And one was the New York Times that said Bill Belichick is a legendary NFL coach, but the Patriots are a disaster that keeps getting worse. We also had this quote from Pro Football Talk where it says Bill Belichick was already on notice, even if the remark from his boss went largely unnoticed. Now it's time to start wondering whether, barring a turnaround, this year will be his last year in New England. They love you when you're hot and they hate you when you're not. Brandon, I mean, I feel like we've had this conversation about Bill Belichick numerous times. This is the chicken or the egg, which came first? I mean, what do you have to say? What say you?
These conversations are toxic and sometimes a waste of time.
Okay.
Right? Like this whole thing, like Shannon Sharp saying it can't be 50-50 with these guys and their egos. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Like everything they did at that level was because they both were there. Tom Brady, there's nobody that can convince me that Tom Brady would have won, what, 6 Super Bowls, okay, without Coach Bill Belichick. Now, would Tom Brady win 2, 3? Probably, possibly. But Coach Belichick also made the decisions on personnel.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one to set the meeting cycle. He's the one to set the tone every single day, right? He's the one that came up with the taglines that we call the Patriot way. Right? Do your job. They'll F it up. Blah, 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 blah. So you can't discard that. You can't just bash him now because he doesn't have Tom Brady and he's losing. Of course, he's not the only coach that lost a quarterback due to injury or retirement. Mm-hmm. And you know, they went the other way. So now, what I need to hear from Tom Brady or Bill Belichick is, you know, is this a real thing for them, right? Did Bill Belichick go out there and say, no, I need to go, I'm going to get rid of Tom Brady because I really want to prove to the world that I'm the greatest coach ever and I don't need Tom Brady? Where is Shannon Sharp getting these things? I don't know. But I think they both need to appreciate each other and embrace and celebrate all the success that they had. I don't know if we'll ever see a run like this again.
Right. I think the talking point is sensationalized, but I think that if you really dive into it, let's look at the facts here. Do I think that Tom Brady had to have some level of natural talent for Bill Belichick to work with when he got to the Patriots as the 199th pick? Yes. Do I think that Tom Brady would have been Tom Brady if he got drafted to, say, the Giants instead of the Patriots? No. So just with those two points alone, I think that, yes, Tom Brady had all the makings of being what he was. But I think the situation that he found himself in was the situation that ultimately unveiled them and molded them into what we see him as today, which is the GOAT. Now, I think that everybody can go ahead and look at the Tampa Bay situation and say, oh, well, he won without Bill Belichick. Okay, that's factual, but you can't ignore everything that happened before that. Before that, he took everything that Bill Belichick instilled in him. Again, not saying that he created him, because I do think you have to have a level of talent for a coach to work with in order to turn into something. But Bill Belichick took his raw talent and molded it into a killer, molded it into a winner. He took everything that he learned from the Patriots way and applied that to Tampa Bay on a loaded team, so he won. Yes, but you can't ignore Bill Belichick's influence in that situation. Yes, he won without him, but he wouldn't have won that without him, I believe, if he didn't have all those years with Bill Belichick. So I know it's easy to pile on Bill Belichick right now because the Patriots do not look good and they have not looked good in X amount of seasons. Mac Jones is no Tom Brady, but we can't negate the fact that he was instrumental in making Brady who he became and ultimately who he will be remembered as in the sport of football.
Right. So here's what we should be questioning. Bill Belichick, the general manager, because he runs the whole show there. Okay. So that's who we should be questioning. But not Bill Belichick, the coach. Because if Bill Belichick got Joe Burrow, if Bill Belichick even got a Brock Purdy, right? He was Mr. Irrelevant. Tom Brady was 199. He was 2-something, right? A lot of teams passed on him 5, 6 times, 7 times, some of the teams, right? If he got A-Rod, if A-Rod said, if they wanted him, hey, I'm going to the Patriots, you think they would have made it back to the Super Bowl?
Yes.
That's my point. So that's why, like, you know, this whole 50-50, this 50-50 thing is like, it's a ridiculous conversation because these are two gentlemen that came together and needed each other to be as successful as they were over the extended period that they were. And so we're sitting here, and that's why I call it talks. We're sitting here trying to bash this person, that person. No, it takes it took both of them. Tom Brady couldn't do what Bill Belichick did. Bill Belichick couldn't do what Tom Brady did. Now, I'll push back on you a little bit here, Ashley, where, you know, when there's something, when God puts something in you, that's in you. That's yours.
Right.
So when you, like, he helped mold. Well, maybe I'm not pushing back on you. Maybe, you know, we're saying.
He molded what was already in Tom Brady.
Correct. So, because so Tom Brady was going to be Tom Brady regardless. But the level of success may have not been there, right?
I agree with that. That's what I said. I said if Tom Brady goes to the Giants, or if he goes to the Chargers, or if he goes to the Miami Dolphins, he may have won a Super Bowl, probably two,
depending on,
you know, the team and the coach in that situation. I think that the talent was there. He was going to be a Super Bowl winning
quarterback. I just wanted to clarify that for...
But a 7-time world champion?
That's a big deal.
That's because of the situation, the system, and the coach that he landed in was instrumental in making that happen. He had to have the talent.
Yeah, so I wanted to highlight. Yeah, I wanted to highlight that because, like, there, you know, obviously, like, I think this, you know, this is the platform, and you know, people need to understand, like, what God has for you, He has for you, you know. And but what it takes is, like, you got to think about the seeds. You know, you got to be in good soil,
right?
So that's what the Patriots was from a football standpoint. It was good soil for players. That's why when we talk about, you know, coaches and how important that environment is, it's extremely important, right? The same conversation with a Justin Fields, the same conversation that we're having with a Zach Wilson. Like, what's important, the player or the coach? Who's it on? So when you think about leadership, all right, and it's a, you know, Tom Brady mindset, how he's been able to develop. When you come in as a rookie, you're really impressionable, right? And the people around you, like you, that's what you're learning from. Like, so as a player, you're looking at all the veterans before you. This is what good players do, aware players do. All right, I got Rod Smith here, legendary Bronco wide receiver. I got John Lynch right here. I got Champ Bailey over here. Coach Shanahan is a coach, but I'm going to put him to the side right now. Let me learn from these players first, my peers. All right, Rook, this is how you take care of your body. Mm-hmm. My first massage came because I kept complaining about my hip. I didn't want to do treatment. I didn't understand this stuff. They had like these, I called them voodoo doctors that would come in and they would be like, they'll rub my arm like this. Oh my God. They'll rub your arm right here, Ashley. And then they say, all right, move your leg. Does your leg feel better? They're working on trigger points. They're working on like the neuromuscular system. That shit was over my head as a rookie. Like they're doing all that. I'm like, how the hell you touch it over here? But my leg hurt. So I wouldn't do that. And then the veteran sat me down. They said, B. Marsh, we're sending Rena to your house and you're getting a massage and we're paying for it. And they got me into this routine. So you learn like from your vets. Who you become is because of what you're learning from the veterans and the people around you. Same thing with coaching. So you take on that mindset. Coach Shanahan, this is how we operate. This is how we handle the press. This is how we da-da-da-da. So for people to say, you know, that Bill Belichick didn't play a huge role in this, they sound crazy. They for sound sure. crazy.
Yeah, and definitely I think that it's his legacy will speak for himself. You can, like you said, you can critique Bill Belichick, the GM, but Bill Belichick's legacy as a coach is definitely solidified and not going to take a hit. We're going to move on. The NFL versus Rodney Harrison.
What's going on there?
During the post-game interview of Sunday Night Football, Rodney Harrison called Zach Wilson, quote, garbage, and appeared several times to try and bait Chiefs DT Chris Jones into agreeing with him. Jones instead decided to take the high road and offered support and praise to the struggling young quarterback. Listen to this.
Was Zach better tonight than what you anticipated he would be watching him on tape? And you could be honest.
If I'm being completely honest, we knew it was going to be a battle. He's continuing to get better week in and week out, and he's continuing to lead week in and week out.
But watching that tape, man, you got to look at this dude and say, oh, he is garbage. Like, we should really tear him apart earlier. Like I said, Zach Wilson is special, man. You just got to give the guy time. You know what I mean?
Wait. Did you say Zach Wilson is special?
Yeah.
I think he had a special night, but I don't think he's special. I've got to prove that over. You're special. Because you proved it over a course of time. He's not special. I'm just saying, Chris.
Hey, listen.
I'm just saying.
For the record, I think everybody is special in their own way. Just want to put that out there. I do. I know that's very juvenile, but I think that everybody is special. I don't think anyone is
special. No, that's true.
Special.
That's not juvenile.
I think that's a very. I think that's a very mean thing to say. You can critique him as a quarterback. I don't think you should call somebody trash, garbage. You know how I feel about name calling with guys. I think Zach Wilson's performance on the football field deserves criticism, and it's fair game. What you do on the field is fair game. I think when you start name calling it and going below the belt and talking about things that are outside the realm of football, not that that's what he did name call, but he didn't talk about things outside the realm of football. I think that's off limits, and I don't like when people do that. And I think that saying that somebody's not special is not great either. He may not be a talented quarterback, he may not be a franchise quarterback, right. He may not be a starting quarterback. All that's fair. But to say someone's not special, I just think that's gross. I think that's below the belt because everybody has something about them.
Well,
you know?
Well, listen, we can always pull from the past. And I mean, I'm not trying to muck wreck and bring up our conversation from last week because it was a good conversation and got a little heated between you and I. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about it today when we brought up Justin Fields talking about Danny. I'm not going to call him Danny Dimes. Okay?
Daniel Jones. Daniel what his mama calls him. Daniel
and Zach
Jones.
Wilson. Mm-hmm. My problem is with players. It's really hard for me as a former player to go out there and bash guys and sometimes even give my opinion, right? It's hard for me to bash guys because you sat in those same seats and you know how it feels. Like I can literally in my head, I can go through 24 hours of being an NFL player in every single moment from Jamal Adams and that recovery process. I've been there. I felt that. I know what he's feeling that moment. Looking at Odell Beckham Jr. hustle to get back, crying week one because he made it back to the league, hearing his story about how he was struggling mentally. And so I know what he's feeling there. I can feel it, right? And then when he goes down, another non-contact injury, right? So you know as a player, you've dropped the ball before. You've missed tackles before. So for you to go out there and, like, call him garbage, or even what Shady said, like, oh, Dak Prescott's ass, this and that, like trash, whatever he said. Like, we all been there before. I think there's a way to hold our guys accountable.
I know.
Right? Like, I think there's a way. And so that's my problem with like people like Rodney Harrison and approaching it this way. Mm-hmm. I just think that, you know, you have to put yourself back in those same seats and those same shoes. And this is my thing. There's been so many experts that's critiqued me or critiqued other people and not knowing what the hell our game plan was. Like, I remember Baldy. Baldy, he's a guy, NFL guy, old NFL guy, and then he, NFL Network, and then on social media, he'll post, like, plays. I was playing for the Giants, and we had Trips Wright, so it's three by one. And I was the outside wide receiver. And the way Coach McAdoo installed this play, he said, I want you to slowly, I've never done this in my life before, mm-hmm. slowly jog off the ball and then sprint over here, mm-hmm. right? So Baldy is looking at this because the Giants now were struggling, mm-hmm. right? So now they're dissecting Odell Beckham Jr., dissecting the acquisition of me, Brandon Marshall, they're dissecting Eli Manning, everybody. And so Baldy goes out there nationally and says, see, this is part of the problem. It's effort. Look at Brandon Marshall's effort. And he starts breaking down all these plays. I'm like, motherfucker, I was coached to do this, mm-hmm. right? And so, like, we go out there and we give these opinions and these thoughts and not knowing the game, not knowing what the responsibility is. And so those are my problems with us as players. It's a difficult position to be in because we're supposed to give our expert opinion. We're supposed to give our critique and our analysis. We're supposed to hold guys accountable. But the way we do it should feel and look differently than anybody else in media.
Now we're going to go ahead and move on to a segment that I feel like a lot of you truly, truly enjoy. And that is, it is time now for Yo Rookie, presented by Pepsi Zero Sugar, NFL Rookie of the Week. Drum roll that. We're going to roll that graphic. Can we roll the graphic? I know there we go. It's Yo Rookie, presented by Pepsi Zero Sugar, NFL Rookie of the Week. Now, we have 6 nominees for Week 4's Pepsi Zero Sugar NFL Rookie of the Week. So go ahead and throw those nominees up there. Drum roll. No? I'm going to keep drum rolling until we can throw those nominees up there. Waiting? Okay. There we go. Oh, we got a familiar face on the list. Brandon, feel free to run through these guys.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few guys that just continue to pop up on this list of nominees each and every week. Bijan Robinson, like, you guys in Atlanta absolutely hit on this guy. He is a freak. I don't think there's been a running back drafted this high in a very long time, and he's worth it. This dude does everything right, and it's going to be cool to watch him, you know, really morph into a pro and then a superstar in this league. I mean, he's already a superstar, really. But he probably won't win this week. You know, Puka, I didn't know who this dude was going into training camp. I didn't know who this dude was going into Week 1. I didn't know who Puka was even when Cooper Kupp went down, right? Like, because now you start thinking about, like, well, who else is going to fill the void while the number one receiver went down? And we're talking about a dude who hit the trifecta in Cooper Kupp. So Puka is someone who's just off to a crazy start right now. And if I'm being honest, when I watch film, there's a lot of room for improvement at the top of his route. So the route running, you know, and then being more efficient in how he released off the line. So it's going to be crazy to see him morph over the remainder of this year and also his career. CJ Stroud, who would have thought that CJ Stroud would be in this position? When you watch not only the Texans, but you watch him, this dude looks like a savvy vet. Like, the IQ is through the roof because he's getting through his progressions fairly quickly, efficiently. He's making the right decision. He feels comfortable checking and getting into different situations. I mean, when's the last time we've seen a rookie quarterback operate the offense at this level?
Well, on the topic of CJ, before you move on, he passed for 306 yards and 2 touchdowns for a passer rating of 111.3 in the Texans' Week 4 win.
Unbelievable. I hate to say this because I really wanted to see someone different win Rookie of the Year award. Obviously, we're just 4 weeks into the season, so we'll see how things continue to progress. But right now, if he continues at this pace, man, he's definitely going to win it. And hell, if they were actually winning games like at a high level, if they have a good record, I can see him getting some consideration for MVP. No, I'm going too far. I'm going too far right there.
Let's go ahead and run through this. We also have Anthony Richardson, quarterback from the Indianapolis Colts. He passed for 200 yards and 2 touchdowns and rushed for 56 yards and 1 touchdown in Week 4.
Special.
We also have the running back from the Miami Dolphins, Devon Achane. He recorded 120 scrimmage yards, 101 rushing, 19 receiving, and scored 2 rushing touchdowns in Week 4. Atlanta running back Bijan Robinson recorded 137 scrimmage yards, 105 rushing, 32 receiving in Week 4. And then Puka Nacua, we've been talking about him all day, caught 9 passes for 163 yards and 1 touchdown in the Rams Week 4 win. And lastly, the star from last night, the Seattle Seahawks cornerback, Devon Witherspoon, 7 tackles, 2 sacks, 4 QB pressures, plus 97 yards in total. Plus a 97-yard interception touchdown. I read that wrong. There we go.
Yeah, this was a dude that they drafted, and they were high on. Last night they put him in a slot, and he was absolutely a game wrecker. You know, a couple sacks, and then obviously the pick six that really put the nail in the coffin when it came to the Giants and what they were trying to do. But that was a playmaker right there. And Pete Carroll, man. I was hearing, listening to the broadcast last night and listening to Troy and them guys talk about, like, why didn't he get more consideration of Coach of the Year last year? Just the job he's been able to do post Legion of Boom, post Russell Wilson. Those are two different eras, right? Their success early on was Legion of Boom and then Russell coming in and being a part of that entire program. And then there was Russell Wilson. And now, so you put all your money into the offense and Russ, and then you move on from Russ, y'all, you know, separate, divorce, whatever you want to call it. And for you to have the Seattle Seahawks in this position for the second year in a row, post, that's special. So it's guys like this, rookies like this, that's stepping up and contributing in a major way fast. So shout out to all the nominees, you know, over the first 4 weeks. Puka's been a guy that's been on this board. I feel like Puka's been on the board every week. Maybe except one. C.J. Stroud's been there, and Bijan Robinson has been there. Feels like every single week. This dude is an all-purpose machine, and it's really special to see these guys morph into their NFL careers and potentially superstars in the NFL.
Well, we have a special guest joining us today from a little city known as Tampa Bay. He was nominated for Rookie of the Week in Week 2. So let's go ahead and welcome in our guest, rookie Christian Eisen Jr. to the show. Christian, welcome. How are you?
How you doing today? I'm doing well.
Boy, you a glass eater, bro. Look at them jaws. Like hopefully they know your neck. I forgot about those football workouts. Sorry, this is the first thing I think about when you pop up, bro. How many neck exercises are you doing today, bro?
Hey, you know they got us in there every time we get in the lift, getting a little four-way neck in. So
right.
Can't miss it.
Put the towel on your head. Y'all doing the towels? I love it. How you feeling, man? 4 weeks into the start of your NFL career, you were nominated a couple weeks ago. You had a huge pick. You had a huge game, big plays. How are you feeling? Tell us about these first 4 weeks.
They've been great, man. Honestly, it's just been a blessing to, you know, be in the position I'm in today. you know, being a starter for the Bucks and, you know, being able to contribute immediately, you know, being able to have impact plays that change the game, you know, and affect us with the winning or losing is just as big as a blessing.
Mm.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about Tampa Bay for a second. I mean, I think a lot of people kind of dismissed what this team was going to go ahead and be able to look like in the post-Tom Brady era after, you know, and just umpteen amount of success. But you guys look competitive. You look good. People doubted, you know, what Baker Mayfield was going to be able to do with the offense, what the defense was going to look like. Kind of led us into just the mindset of this team in, like I said, the post-Tom Brady era where a lot of people wrote you off before the season even started.
Right.
Yeah, just coming in when I got here at OTAs and seeing like all the talent that we had in the locker room that I think you said people didn't, really didn't see in us, and just having the guys go out there, you know, with each other and get better day by day and compete. And, you know, we know we had so going into every game, it was just kind of shocking to see how much of underdogs we were. But going into every game, we just attack, you know, just the opportunity to be out there, you know, prove people wrong week in and week out. And that's what we've been doing up so far. So we should plan on keep doing that.
Yo, Coach Bowles is my guy. He was our defensive coordinator when I had a little cup of tea. I was about to say something else, but, you know, I got to stay on task here. But when I had a little cup of tea with the Miami Dolphins, it was a two-year stint, and he was our defensive coordinator. Then he became our interim head coach. You know, a couple years later, he became the head coach of the Jets. He came and traded for me when I was in Chicago. I know he's a dude that he's a leader. He's a man's man, but he doesn't say a lot. So piggybacking off of Ashley, what was his message throughout the year, throughout the offseason and also the start of the year around, like, what this team was going to be, right? Like, was he walking around saying, like, look, people are writing us off, but that's not our story? Or was he just going through his process?
Yeah, like you said, just, you know, reminding us throughout the offseason that, you know, like you said, people are writing us off. You know, people don't have high expectations for us. Like you said, the post-Brady era, you know, we're the bottom of the NFC, you know, the NFC South and all that stuff, just not seeing us as competitors. And like you said, us knowing who we are and what the talent that we have and the work ethic that this team has, and us going out there just playing fast, playing physical, playing for each other, you can see it on the field and see how it comes out.
The biggest question around the team really wasn't the defensive guy. Like, if people really know Coach Bowles, wherever he goes as a head coach or defensive coordinator, he's going to put it together. And I would say the reason why they have this ring, some people are saying Tom Brady, but it was Coach Bowles and that defense that ran through Aaron Rodgers and, you know, Drew Brees and then Patrick Mahomes, right? That defense, legendary. So I'm not surprised that the defense is standing up the way they are, but it's Baker Mayfield, bro. Like, when did you see, you know, a Baker Mayfield was like, yo, this dude can lead us. This dude is the starting quarterback. When did you see it?
Yeah, so when I got there, really during training camp, honestly, just being out there with him, getting a chance to take some early first-team reps and being out on the field with him, you know, his ability to ID and his ability just to scan the defense and kind of get an idea pre-snap of the grasp of what we had schematically. We run a lot of stuff. So, you know, just get a chance to pick his brain, see what he's telling me. Like, I could tell he knows what he's talking about. So it's no coincidence that he's out there playing as good as he is. Like you said, he's playing free. I think he's playing some of the best ball in his career right now.
Mm.
I mean, you guys right now are sitting at the top of a division that was pretty wide open before the season started. Everybody had a different answer on who was going to be the top dog. Obviously, we're only 4 weeks into the season, a month in. You guys are at 3-1. You have the Lions coming up, and then you have the Falcons, a division rival, before you have to face the Bills. The mindset going into these games to stay atop of a division, like I said, people said was wide open. What does that game plan look like for you guys, at least from a mental standpoint?
Yeah, you know, just taking it really honestly one week by week. You know, I treat every game like it's a one week season. And, you know, just having that mindset that, you know, this week that we have a bye week this week coming up, the following week, you know, we have a physical team coming into Tampa in the Detroit Lions. You know, they got some great energy rolling, and that's going to be a physical game that we know that. So, and we got a couple guys banged up right now that we want to, you know, get healthy for this week coming up because we know how important this stretch is.
Mm. Bro, yeah, it's a long season. You know, you ever hear them talk about the rookie wall?
No, but if you're referring to how long the season is coming into a rookie, you know, just leaving college and the combine training, all that stuff. They say it's the longest year of your life, and everybody just keeps reminding me of that. So
you haven't heard the term rookie wall?
Not yet. What's that?
Oh, look, let me tell you about the rookie wall. So that basically, because of what you just said, right? Like, y'all never had an off season. You go from, and actually, you trained at House of Athlete Tampa. So shout out to you and the whole Yo Murphy team. But you go from bowl game or your last game to immediately going into combine training, and that's intense. The biggest moment of your football career, and then you go into, well, before you even do that, you might have a bowl game, right? And then you go into the whole draft process, okay? And then you get into the offseason, which is a little different than college, but now you have so many games, right? So they say around like week 9, week 10, where you see some rookies just start like, ugh, you know, like the energy ain't there, right? You know, now you feeling a little bruised and nicked up, and now you ain't recovering as fast. So that's the rookie wall. And so you got to be careful not to hit that rookie wall. You got to make sure you're taking care of yourself.
Yeah, definitely. Should I plan on doing that? I'm here right now. My treatment place is in treatment right now. So trying to stay ahead of the game, have every edge out as possible. You know, I haven't played a full NFL season yet, so I can imagine how long that is. But definitely trying to stay ahead of the curve.
Yeah, well, straight.
Well, speaking of that transition from college into the NFL, I think a lot of the times we're focused on the rookies. They're under a different microscope than I think the guys that we're used to seeing, just because it's new, it's exciting. You want to see who's making that transition easier than who isn't. But what has been the easiest transition for you to make coming from college, your first NFL season so far, and what has been the most difficult?
Mm. Yeah, I would say the easiest is just, you know, honestly, the speed of the game. Transitioning to the speed of the NFL to college, it hasn't been like, you know, too much of a drastic transition. Mm. As far as just playing out there, and I played Big Ten, which is, you know, probably some of the best, you know, probably the best offenses you're going to see in the country week in, week out. So, you know, having that physicality brought to me from college and being able to see that, and in the NFL, it translates well. So that was kind of one of my best transitions, where I didn't feel like the game was too fast or sped up for me. Well, I would say that kind of was difficult for me, though, was just coming in OTAs and running the playbook. I came in learning nickel and safety. They, you know, first OTAs, you know how that is. They taught us like 80 plays or so. So I'm learning in a weekend. So I'm learning 80 plays at nickel, 80 plays at safety. You know, I'm calling home. Like, it's a lot. You know, I don't know if I can get this down. You know, I'm undrafted. So I'm hoping like, damn, like hoping I don't know what I'm doing out here. So that was the biggest adjustment for me, you know, and Coach Bowles helped me with that a lot. So
hearing you talk about all of that took me back to that guy you just brought up, Coach Bowles, right? That's my guy. Is that defense, is it complex or is it simple?
Outside looking in, I would say it's complex. You know, we see a lot of things that, you know, kind of intertwine with each other as far as inside intellectual, inside the defense that we understand, that's kind of makes it simple for us. But outside looking in, like if I showed you the playbook, you would think it's 100 plays, 150 plays.
Y'all still running palms?
A bit. You know, a bit mix. We mix it up though, man. We mix just a bunch of defenses every run. I couldn't even put a point one. We run so many.
What makes, and my last question on this topic, like what makes Coach Bowles and his defense so special, right? I know you're just now getting started in your NFL career, but you've been around high school, college, right? You understand it. You get it. What makes Coach Bowles special?
I would say just his ability to dissect the offense and be a step ahead of what he really wants to do. What's our ultimate goal as far as the game plan? Like, you know, I sit down and watch film with him, you know, once a week, and just picking down the game plan and what he sees and why he's calling what he's calling.
One-on-one? Y'all watching film together one-on-one?
Yeah.
Oh, he love you. Damn. Coach Bowles sitting down with you one-on-one?
Hey, I'm a rookie nickel. I need all the game I could get. You know what I'm saying? So I'm a rookie on the field, so I can't let my guys down. So.
I want to go back to something that you said when, you know, during OTAs, when you were learning the playbook and you said you were calling home and, you know, wondering, you know, can I do this? You know, this is a lot. You know, it's overwhelming. And it is Mental Health Awareness Week. So I just want to ask you, like, during that time frame where it's just a drastic transition and it's overwhelming and, you know, a lot is riding on learning this playbook and mastering it and being efficient at it, you know, what, you know, you were doing to take care of your mental so that you weren't getting overwhelmed, that you weren't starting to question yourself. You know, there's something called imposter syndrome where, like, you start questioning whether you even belong in the position that you're currently in or you find yourself in. What were some of the things that you did to make sure you didn't fall down that hole?
Yeah, you know, I have a lot of good people in my corner, you know, just around me that I could communicate with day in and day out. you know, to keep me encouraged and remind me, you know, who I am, you know, as a person first and as a player, what I'm capable of. So just having those outlets to go to. And like I said, I called my parents, I called my friends, my family. You know, I called friends that play, you know, here or other places around the league. So just having those outlets, you know, those brotherhoods to be able to fall back on, you know, just to remind you who you are as a person. And, you know, if it's like this is a transition for you. So don't be, you know, don't reject, you know, the change, the transition. Just accept it and go through it. So definitely that.
What, bro, like, how did it feel? And this is, you know, I'm winding down here. I want you to get back to treatment and recovering. You know, it's a long week, long year. How did it feel being nominated, right? Because undrafted, no one's expecting a lot, right? Throwing you at nickel, throwing you at safety. How was that feeling, knowing that you were nominated?
Yeah, it was a blessing, honestly, man. I didn't expect it. You know, I wasn't too familiar with the Rookie of the Week thing was. Honestly, I didn't know about it before. And so just having the opportunity to be nominated for that was a blessing. You know, everybody at home, you know, that's the most important to me, you know, making everybody at home proud. You know, a lot of the kids where I'm from, you know, they look up to me, they text me, stuff like that. You know, I got parents calling me, you know, they play, the kids playing, want to play sports because of me and stuff like that. So just having an impact on the community, you know, that's really big for me. And, you know, whether I won or not, it was just big to have the opportunity for people at home to see it, to see somebody doing something positive.
So last one for me, Ashley, who do y'all have this week?
We got the bye this week, but next week coming up, we got Detroit.
All right. So, Detroit. Have you started watching film with Coach Bowles or yourself yet on Detroit? They looking good.
Not yet. We still unwinding right now. We just, you know, doing some recovery stuff, but we'll definitely attack that in this upcoming week for sure.
Ooh, boy. Okay, that's going to be a good one. Where is it at?
It's here. Yep. It's a Crimson game, too. So they just changed the, I think, the 4:30 kickoff.
Ooh. That's kind of like a baby primetime game. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Damn, they flexing already. I think that was a new rule change. They couldn't flex games until, I think, post-November last year. They would flex games. Now they just flex y'all, which says a lot about the work that y'all putting in and where y'all stand right now. That's going to be a good game. Nobody expected it, but I'm proud of y'all, man. Proud of you.
I appreciate it.
Well, listen, before we let you go, I've been asking all the rookies that have come through the show the same question, and it's just to fill in the sentence. My rookie season will be blank.
My rookie season will be one to remember. You know, I have goals of being a defensive rookie of the year this year, so it'll be one to remember for sure.
Let's go.
I love that. That's an amazing, amazing way to finish that sentence. Well, we don't want to keep you from your rehab and getting ready, you know, for what's to come the remainder of the season. Enjoy your bye week, and thank you so much for joining us.
Appreciate you, bro.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Listen, if you want to go ahead and vote for any of this week's nominees, make sure you head over to NFL.com/voting/rookies. The URL is right there, NFL.com/voting/rookies. And ladies and gentlemen, that has been the Yo Rookie segment presented by Pepsi Zero Sugar, NFL Rookie of the Week.
Yes, sir.
All right, y'all. So listen, that does it for this edition of Paper Route. To everybody listening on Sirius XM Faction Talk 103, thank you so much for joining us. If you want to go ahead and actually watch the show with your eyes, head over to the I Am Athlete YouTube page and check it out. For everybody in the chat that has come through throughout the show, thank you so much for watching. And we will be back tomorrow. It's hump day, so enjoy.
Peace.
Bye, guys.